This week, we interview Brother Gerald Fortune, a man in search of real truth. From his incredible story about coming into the fraternity.
He called me on the cell phone and he said someone was trying to take him out of the store. He said somebody was trying to kidnap him out of the store. My emotions were so heightened, I just popped right out of my body. And I was standing next to myself watching this incident play out.
To his studies into the mystic origins of the craft.
The Great Pyramid, which, you know, I mean, pyramid is fire in the middle. That was the light. It was considered the light of the world, and they held initiations there.
Are Freemasonry's rituals a type of archetype for Egyptian schools that taught the same things? Find out right now.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. This is episode number 451. I want to first and foremost give a shout out, a thanks to all of our Patreon subscribers and PayPal subscribers, our producers, fellows, contributors, those people who make this show happen week after week, month after month, year after year. Thank you all so very much. You make this program happen for everybody, and not just for right now, for all time, all episodes, all the time. Recently was requested some information on how to access the first 100 or so episodes because they're not on iTunes. Well, in order to access those episodes, you do need to go to our website and go to our Liberated Syndication website, which you can find right on our website, or you can download the podcast source application and just swipe all the way down, and then you can hear episode number 1 all the way to 151, and then the latter 300 and or so episodes will be available on iTunes. So a little confusing, but they're all there for you forever. So this week we got a great show. As you heard in the opener, my good friend and brother Gerald Fortune is on, and you know we're not doing any ads because of the COVID-19 situation. A lot of people are out of work, so we want to be mindful of that. But if you want to help out the program, please go to WCYpodcast.com, check out Support the Show, and see the options there. And now, let's get right into this awesome interview with Brother Gerald Fortune. All right, everybody, we're back this week with a special guest. I have with us today Brother Gerald Fortune. Now, Brother Gerald has been in the craft a few years, and a few years ago, I heard him speak the Illinois Lodge of Research. He gave a presentation to a packed room full of brothers about his journey into Masonry, and he had a really interesting talk. And I'm somebody who's into the esoteric and all these kinds of things, and he talked about the power of crystals. And then last year, I was able to sit in at Libertyville Lodge 492. He did a presentation on the topic of the apotheosis, and it involved Egyptian mythology and all this amazing stuff. So get ready. I want to introduce Brother Gerald Fortune. Thanks for coming on the show, brother.
Thanks for having me, RJ. It's great to be here, man. How have you been doing?
I've been doing okay. You know, like I said, it's been a couple years, and 2.5, maybe almost 3 years ago now, well, 2.5, I got your email address after the presentation. I said, I got to get you on the Whence Came You podcast because people are going to love your story. They're going to love what you talk about. And I wrote your email address down wrong, and then I lost track of you until I saw you just whatever it was 6 months ago. And so I was so excited that you came out and then you did a talk, and it's just fortuitous, I guess.
I'm glad we hooked back up.
So for our audience who might not know you, tell us what lodge you're a member of.
I am from Palatine 314, right there on Dundee and Hicks Road, and I'm also junior warden at A.O. Fay 676 in Highland Park.
So you're super active, just like I guess most Masons that listen to this show are, or if they're not super active, at least in Lodge, they're really active in the philosophy and the teachings. So I alluded to this fact that you had this kind of incredible journey, not even kind of, a definite incredible journey into the craft. Can you give us some of that history?
Absolutely. I think if I could, the first the first point I think that led me on the path to being a Mason was, it was an incident in a mall during Christmas season. And my son, who's at right now, he's 21 years old. At the time, he was 10. And I have another son that was 9 at the time, and my daughter that was 8. They all went, and we were, you know, pretty familiar with this mall. It wasn't actually even a very big mall. It's in Champaign, Illinois, at the U of I campus. And so they were around doing some shopping. I gave them all a $100 bill, and they were doing their Christmas shopping. Well, my oldest son, Dominic, called me on his cell phone. And the funny thing is, this kid had, you know, multiple cell phones, and he was always without a cell phone because he was always losing it. And I just didn't get him a cell phone until a couple of days before this incident. And he called me on the cell phone, and he said someone was trying to take him out of the store. He said somebody was trying to kidnap him out of the store. Now, on the surface of it, you know, I think this is a kid's imagination, and, you know, nobody's trying to take this kid out of the mall, although that does happen. So I rushed around. My intuition was telling me for some reason to take this kid serious, and so I rushed around there to where he was at, and as I was coming up on the store that they were in, which was a PacSun, there was a guy right behind him that was actually following him out the mall, and we walked right into each other face to face. And I approached this guy and asked him why was he so close to my son. And he said that he was an off-duty security guard at another mall, and my son was behaving suspiciously. So I'm like, what do you mean behaving suspiciously? He said, well, he was, you know, picking up clothes and looking at them. I was like, it's a clothing store. That's what people do. You know, he's got money in his pocket. You know what I mean? And I could see that this guy's intentions were exactly what my son thought they were. And for some reason, my emotions were so heightened, I just popped right out of my body. And I was standing next to myself watching this incident play out. And I didn't know how to, you know, I didn't know how to process that. After that incident, I did some research, come to find out at this time, Champaign County was the number 3 place in the world for human trafficking. You know, I've always had this little tick about research, which is what led me to Freemasonry. But at that moment, I researched, you know, this human trafficking thing, and we were actually in the number 3 location at that time for human trafficking.
This is crazy.
Yeah. it blew my mind. And so I went to some professionals, you know, medical professionals and religious professionals, I'll clarify that, and to find out what happened where I was able to view myself, you know, and everybody was pretty much giving me the same thing, that it was an imagination. I had imagined this, and you couldn't convince me of that because it was, you know, I know I didn't imagine. And that just led me on a lot of research into the occult, metaphysics, and, you know, I followed a trail through, you know, medieval hermeticism and metaphysics and the occult, through the Renaissance, back to ancient Greek hermeticism, and into Arabic alchemy, and then it all led me back into Egyptian alchemy, and Egypt led me back to Freemasonry, because without knowing anything about Freemasonry at the time, when I was studying ancient Egypt, Egypt is about Freemasonry. That's what it was all, the entire culture was established as a lodge. In fact, in the ancient world, the Great Pyramid, which, you know, means pyramid is fire in the middle, that was the light, it was considered the light of the world, and they held initiations there. And so pretty much identical to our initiations, which are laid out in what's called the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which, by the way, isn't an accurate name for it because it was found, you know, with mummies. And so it just got the moniker for of the Egyptian Book of the Dead, but the actual name of it is called Pert Imheru, which means a becoming or the awakening of Heru, which is what we do at our degree ritual when we raise consciousness. We at that point, that ritual, what it has done is it's a play that awakens your consciousness or your soul. And when you are raised up, the first thing that's whispered into that awakened soul is the pass and the grip of a master mason. And this is how it was played out, you know, thousands of years ago in ancient Egypt. But when I was discovering this about the Egyptian hieroglyphic system, or what they called the Metuneter, when I was discovering that, I did not know any of these things about Freemasonry at the time.
What is that last term you use?
Well, the Greeks called the symbol system that the Egyptians used, where we see on the temple walls, the hieroglyphs is what they called them.
Yep.
The actual name for it is called the Metuneter, which translates to Word of God. So the hieroglyphic system was a system of symbols that were considered to be the Word of God. So they
fascinating.
And those symbols are where we get modern day Freemasonry. And there's, you know, a lot of the temples, our rituals, which at this point they, you know, were considered plays. It's a play that is mimicking the creation process.
Let me interrupt for a second. Talk about ancient Egyptian initiation, and we talk about Freemasonry. Necessarily, the first thing I think about was the first book on Freemasonry I read, which was after I had been raised. I read Manly Hall's Lost Keys of Freemasonry. And
yes.
What happens is the book takes us through a Egyptian priest's journey from kind of like being initiated into the full-blown priesthood. It's like a story, and then it injects it with elements of the degree itself to draw these parallels.
Yeah.
And so I look at that, and this is fascinating to me, and then I think about how the Egyptian rite of... I shouldn't say Egyptian rite. I should say how the Egyptian ritual is transferred from ancient times into, or through conquering and appropriate cultural appropriations through these different systems in Greece, and then through the Age of Enlightenment, the Renaissance and Enlightenment thinkers, and then we see some of this stuff that really comes out in the ritual later on within Freemasonry. It's got this, I guess not quite direct, but the lineage is there in terms of what it's teaching. And when I research, I'm huge on researching the Rite of Eleusis, and so, or the Eleusinian Rite, which is this Grecian play, which says that it, well, I can't say it says, the mythology about it, right? Like, I don't have facts, so I can't speak in facts. I'll speak what I've read in terms of the mythology, says that, you know, this rite comes from the ancient times, that it came from Egypt. And then in some of the more obscure writings that I've read, they refer to the Black Rite of Memphis. And this is that Egyptian rite, the initiation in the pyramid kind of idea. And I just find it fascinating that we have this, you know, correlation, this idea of waking the sleeper, that's kind of all contained. Alexander the Great said that anybody who's not been through the mysteries, and at this time he's talking about Grecian mysteries, anybody who's anybody has gone through the mysteries. It was like the thing to do.
Yes.
And it begs the question, why or how, or Freemasonry, is it the modern day equivalent of that in your opinion? What are your thoughts there?
I think it's the legacy. It is the Hermeticism, and they believe that consciousness wakes and sleeps in during these cycles throughout time. So we go through periods of time where consciousness in the world itself is asleep, and we usually coin these times as dark ages. And so, and if you look at those times, it mimics the same night and day process that we go through on in a 24-hour period. But if you exclude those periods of darkness, you can pretty much trace a direct line of Freemasonry back to ancient Egypt. And the purpose of what we do is the same purpose they stated as their reason for being, to complete the temple, to go back to their father, the creator, as a finished Ashlar to be a part of the temple. And so our purposes, our rituals, our charges can all be traced back to different holy books like the Pert Imheru, the laws of Mot, the becoming of Ra, all these ancient Egyptian books. It's, you find our rituals right there.
I've noticed one of the things that you are tuned in on is this idea of the Egyptian connection, the mythology and the esoteric things that come out of it. And one of the things that I guess kind of interests me in terms of making Freemasonry, I don't want to say better, I don't know how to say it, but basically you have a large portion of Freemasonry who doesn't necessarily treat the raising of a consciousness with the reverence that such a ceremony should have. You've got so many people who might just think, oh, it's the thing that you go through in order to get to the other parts of Masonry that are quote-unquote better, like social time and all these things. If Freemasonry is, and in Illinois, whether you believe it or not, in our Intender book, you know, it talks about raising to a new level of consciousness and what it does not refer to, which is kind of this social aspect. So in our texts, it alludes to the fact, in our official statements issued by our Grand Lodge and the Grand Lodge Education Committee many, many years ago, it alludes to a raising of a consciousness. Why do you think this is not more talked about, or that people continually maybe don't treat it with the awe and reverence it deserves? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
That's a really good question, because I feel the exact same way about this that you do. We're on the same page.
Like, what, you know, can we do?
What I do is, personally, the reason why my interest is so centered in Egypt is because it strengthens us as a fraternity. It strengthens my fraternal experience for me. It's kind of like to understand yourself. Sometimes it helps to understand what your father was like when he was growing up and the things that he did and his habits and his struggles and his triumphs and things of that nature. And by understanding your father, a young man can understand himself much better. And so when I look at Egypt as in terms of our modern day Freemasonry, I look at it through that lens. And just, I think everybody is not attracted to the mystical the way we are. But I think that's the key. In some cases, the ritual is just this thing that they do, and it's not a very big deal. To me, it was the most important thing that happened in my life.
Let me ask you about that. You studied and you dove into the mystical, a veritable expert probably before you even came into the lodge. What was your journey into Freemasonry? How did that go?
Well, I was raised a Master Mason at Palatine, and I was put, my first spot was a senior steward, and I really like Palatine Lodge. It's a great group of brothers over there.
I agree, yeah.
I like those guys a lot. Same with A.O. Fay. Right now we have Andy Sessler as worshipful, and it's a great place. Everybody's different. I think they just, I don't click with everybody, and I don't, you know, I don't know why, but don't.
Well, I think we're all like that a little bit, right? Like, there's some people that we just can talk to and you feel like your heart open up to those people. And then other people maybe were just a little bit more guarded around because maybe they don't exactly see the world through the same lenses that we do, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I had such a spiritual experience leading up to Freemasonry that some of the things that I was able to learn and understand, I knew it wasn't for everyday people. I knew that it was for Master Masons, and the only way I could share certain aspects of my experience is when I was raised a Master Mason, because I knew this is nothing I could share with anybody else. And so I kept it to myself until I became a Master Mason. And it's an amazing thing. I love being a Mason.
When you talked about having this like explosive, when you say pop, that's, I don't know. I have my own experiences I've been a practicing meditations for years, and my teacher was just like, oh, one day you'll get there. You'll get to this point where things will happen. And I said, well, how will I know? And he said, well, there's no mistake in it. You'll know, right? And so when you say the pop, this sounds really weird, but there's no better word.
Yeah.
Anybody, like, now you know, like, if you want to fake this experience, you can say the pop. But that's what it is. Have you been able to work with that feeling? Have you had similar experiences since?
Yeah, it was from that time on I started regular meditation practices and fasting and things like that. And I just went on this search to find all the pieces of this puzzle, which is kind of alluded to in one of the Egyptian texts where Isis, Set, which is Osiris's brother, he cuts his body into 14 pieces, and his wife Isis puts his body back together so that she can then have the son Horus.
Right.
Becomes the pharaoh. The funny thing is that story is like the centerpiece of our third degree ritual. It's describing our third degree ritual, but in a different context. So I went through a lot of, I've had a lot of progress in my meditation practices. I do one, it's an Egyptian meditation. And what it does is the breathing methods with it that you have to do, the four count breathing methods. And I think the word is dantian. In ancient Chinese culture, we have these three dantians in our body, which is like three furnaces. And the meditation practice is meant to heat up those furnaces during the meditation practice. And what that does is it literally pulls in more life force, where, you know, where you're able to tap into the outside life force and draw it into your body. And what this does is it heals the body, it keeps you younger and more vital so that you can pursue craft. And it's like the deal that you make with God is to pursue craft, whatever that may be, because we're here to leave something, you know, a legacy.
Right.
It doesn't mean just one person learns something from our experience. That's all we can do. One person learns something from us being here, then we're good. But that's the deal the contract we sign with the Creator when you go into these processes of being raised in these meditation processes. But the important thing I might note is by being a Master Mason, when you have your own personal spiritual work, it is much more powerful than it would be for a person that's not a Master Mason. They can't make the progress in spirituality that we can because of that third degree ritual. And I think personally, that's why throughout history, you've had various popes come after the Masons because of this ritual, or the Knights Templars and things like that, because it is the Holy Grail. It's the doctrine of immortality. And that is the Holy Grail on this planet, the doctrine of immortality. And we are the keepers of it. And like you said a minute ago, some brothers will, you know, go through the third degree, and it's not really a meaningful thing for them. And they just perform the most important thing that a human being could perform, is to have that group of men perform that ritual for you and raise you up and call you brother. That's the purpose of the human experience, I believe.
Man, so much of what you just said resonates with me. You know, when you said to the contract to pursue the craft, whatever that is.
Yes.
And, you know, I got chills when you said that, because I feel like that's it, to the revelation that was with the Eleusinian mysteries, with Dionysian mysteries, with the Egyptian mystery. The revelation is something that, yes, I could just say three words and that would be probably sufficient to sum it up, but it's not enough to know that. It is something you have to go through. And once you do that, then you can live that philosophy to pursue the craft without fear of anything interfering with it. And you talked about the ability to draw in, right? To see more truth. And so one of the things that probably the first time I've talked about this on this show, but I had somebody ask me once, one of my students, they said, how do you explain this idea that there's more? And I said, well, I guess I'll just describe it in the silliest way possible. Imagine you're a floating ball of spaghetti, just in the vacuum of space. And surrounding you is a strainer or a colander, right? And so you're like, this is great. And then you feel some wind, you know, occasionally on your spaghetti self. There's some wind. Oh, wow, that's really interesting. Well, outside the colander, outside the strainer, the wind is greater. There's more of it. Right? But you don't know because you're inside the strainer.
Right.
And then all of a sudden there's some sprinkling of glitter that's landing on your spaghetti form inside this little spaghetti ball. But outside the colander, outside the strainer, there's like larger pieces of confetti and stuff that don't come through. Right? Because they're too big. And so what I was trying to explain is there's so much more to absolute reality than what you experience with your human meat suit, this filter that we have, that it becomes necessary to go through these initiations, to do the meditative work, to understand absolute reality so that you can pursue the craft, you know, whatever that might be. I found your passion, the way you were talking about that, was just awesome. About a year ago, you presented on this idea of apotheosis. You had a great, great presentation, by the way.
Thank you.
Have you done much world travel?
Well, not a lot. I did. I have traveled a little bit through Europe, across Italy, Florence, Milan, Pompeii, Rome, then on to Athens, over to Morocco, Egypt, Spain, Bilbao, and Barcelona, Madrid, London.
Not a lot. You just described like most of the more interesting, you know, quote unquote areas that there are. When you did these travels, was it for pleasure or was it a part of your kind of trying to connect with and learn more?
It was definitely part of my spiritual journey. That's why I did it. I visited, you know, libraries everywhere I went, and I wanted to places that had a historical footprint for metaphysics or the occult or hermeticism and things of that nature. And one of the interesting things that you discover is that even though we are all wearing this same human meat suit, at any time on the planet, you have people in this meat suit that are living gods, and you have some that are just humans, and you have some that are animals. But we are all in the same suit. And that it creates some horrendous events in the human experience, but it makes the game a lot of fun. You know, it is a version of Where's Waldo?
Right.
You know, and it's kind of like, you know, what I felt I was doing traveling, trying to figure out, put together these pieces of what the hell are we doing on this ball flying through space? Like, you know, why are we on this ball flying through space like this? And, you know, what's the meaning of it all?
So you got to go to Egypt. What's some things you could tell us about Egypt that just for you and your experience were amazing?
It felt like home when I got there.
Really?
Yeah, it felt like home. I felt it kind of, all the stress left my body. I was completely relaxed. There's some temples you go in, like the temple at Luxor, which is the temple that the Solomon's temple is based on. This temple can create such a vibrational pull on you that it brought me to tears looking at the writings on the wall or the hieroglyph system, you know, and at that point being able to understand this moving picture that was chiseled into these walls 5,000 years ago. It's literally a moving picture, and it brought me to tears. When you go down to the Aswan Dam and you see the most occultic monument on the planet, which is the temple at Abu Simbel, which was left by Ramses II, with the four giant colossus outside the temple and through the inside of the temple, the Holy of Holies, where he has Ra-Harakhti, the god Amun, the god Ptah, and himself sitting there as the lodge, the worshipful master, the junior and senior warden, and Ptah, which is the master of crafts, he sits in the north. And this temple it lights up twice a year at October 22nd and February 22nd, which is George Washington's birthday, which corresponds, this ancient temple corresponds with George Washington's apotheosis, 150, 200 years ago, just about. But when that sunlight hits that inside of that temple at sunrise, it only lights up three of the deities. The fourth deity remains in the dark, which is Ptah. The sun does not hit him.
It does.
Yes. It does not hit him. That seat remains in the dark. But for the Pharaoh, for the Creator, and for Ra-Harakhti, those three chairs light up. And this was Ramses' monument to the lodge, is why he designed it this way. And the four colossus of him on the outside, we would later learn them to be the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. They're the original tetragrammaton. And so that monument was his apotheosis, or his stamp saying that he has passed the test. He has lived as an upright and just Mason, and now he will be going to sit with the Creator. And he left that monument as proof of it. And George Washington's apotheosis corresponds to that monument to the very day. Like, the significance to that can't be overstated, because, you know, based on, you know, metaphysical laws, it's as if Ramses is predicting the birth of our nation.
Holy cow.
And then George, you know, true to form, George Washington's, you know, monument is a 555-foot Egyptian obelisk. You know, he was obviously not Egyptian.
Right.
And so, but he was a Freemason. And so that connection, man, can't be overstated, that our country does have a responsibility to the growth of the planet, and our fraternity does have a responsibility to the country. And I think some brothers, maybe that's not why they join Freemasonry, or maybe that's not something that they're aware of, or maybe they're not interested in, or maybe they're searching for that.
I find that when you drew it back to Freemasonry in America, and I think about all of the things that Freemasonry stands for in terms of uplifting, we'll call it the quality of life for people.
Yeah.
And for societies, and for leaving the place. You know, the first time I ever heard the phrase, leave it better than you came into it, was for Freemasonry. It said, you know, that's your goal, is once you've been raised to a Master Mason, we hope through the study and application of its tenets and teachings, you'll be able to leave this planet better than you left, than you came into it. And I, at that point, you know, I never thought about any kind of humanistic legacy. What would we do? And so when you make that correlation about Freemasonry in America and the ancient teachings and these kind of things, yeah, man, I'm all in with you. So once you became a Freemason, when you went through your degrees, did you find that element of completeness?
Yes, it was for me because, you know, remember leading up to my third degree, you know, leading up to my first degree, before I was initiated in, I knew the significance of why I wanted to be a Freemason and the importance of that those three degrees. And I was doing so many rituals on my own before I became a Mason, which were Egyptian rituals. Most of them at that time were medieval rituals because I was still, at that point, I was still translating them into the ancient Egyptian rituals. Once I hit that third degree, my personal rituals became these really powerful spiritual experiences that I would have during my own rituals or my own meditations. My degrees empowered it, it was at a whole other level.
It's almost like having gone through a degree, it solidifies something as being quote unquote real. And then knowing that it's real reinforces or backs up or further empowers more of the teachings of something else. Like one of the things that I study pretty heavily is something called Boda or Builders of the Adytum through Paul Foster Case, which a lot of it is tarot based, but tarot in the sense of like psychology. So like diving into the depths of my mind, right? But there are things that go along with Boda and ritual practices that would not be the same had I not experienced the raising or the degrees. If there are people out there today who are thinking about Freemasonry, or maybe they're just on a quest or a seeker, what advice do you think you could give them, or in your best way, what could you tell them?
To get to know themselves, know why they want to become a Freemason. Because if they know and get in touch with who they are, you know, it's what's the ancient Greek man, know thyself. This is actually the plaque that sits between the paws of the Sphinx. It's the headline of that plaque. It says, man, know thyself. And to me, that resonates through time. Because the more you get to know yourself, the more you get to know why you do the things you do, you know, what your motivations are, it causes that fragmentation process within you, splitting the individual within you, the indivisible duality. We have the ability to split it. And the more we get to know ourselves, and without the safety net of, you know, having brothers, it can be a scary process. It can turn into psychosis in some cases if you don't have the, you know, the mental fortitude to deal with a complete separation within the self, because we always talk about these things and theoretically and like that, but the process of it happening is literal. You can cause that fragmentation. And so it's good to study men that went through that process. One of the men I like is G.I. Gorgiev, which was a 18th century Russian mystic. And one of his pupils was number one pupil, which was P.B. Ospensky, wrote a book called In Search of the Miraculous. And I recommend this book to every brother. You know, and even a man that is genuinely drawn to the square and compass, that he wants to be one of our brothers because he's drawn to that square and compass. I think that book is very important to read. You know,
In Search of the Miraculous?
In Search of the Miraculous, because it lays out real ego work. It's a lot of work. It's a tedious process. It's very hard because the ego is so much smarter than us that we think that ego work is not even that important because we listen to absolutely everything our ego tells us.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
You know, everything our ego tells us, we don't even know it's the ego talking to us.
Yeah. And it disguises itself.
Oh, yeah. And the scary thing is the more you evolve consciously and you go through this conscious work and this meditation work and you're able to reach different levels of consciousness, the ego evolves with you.
Right. Like, it's like when you take too many antibiotics.
Yeah. You know, so you're on the 13th floor and you think you left him in the basement. No, he's on the 13th floor with you. And so that's why it's so good, because no man can keep his ego in check. You need trusted brothers and that was the schools of the ancient mystery schools of Egypt, Babylon, Pythagoras. His ancient mystery schools was based on ego work all through medieval. Any man that studied the occult and studied hermeticism, because you can't have a man walking around thinking he's God on earth. You know
right.
what I mean?
That's
not what we want. It's a process to bring God's influence and you in back into our lives. But you want brothers, you know, by your side as you go through this, because the fragmentation process is real. I'm still looking, you know, for brothers that are interested in that kind of work, that want to read, you know, P.D. Ouspensky's book and experience fragmentation and to be able to identify their egos and come to terms with there's a whole other person stuck in this body with you. And I think I wouldn't bank on someone that's not a brother to teach him this process. I personally wouldn't gamble on it to teach any man that's not initiated into our ancient rituals the process of fragmentation. Either, you know what I mean? It would cause psychosis or something, and I would feel responsible.
So, brother, you had mentioned you're a big reader, a big researcher, and I'm definitely going to put a link back to the book that you recommended. What's another key book that you wish more brothers or anybody interested in the occult or inner work to dive into?
I got one called, one of my favorites, which is a book by R.A. Schwaller de Lubitz. And he's an interesting guy to do some research on. He actually spent 17 years in Egypt studying the Temple of Luxor, which our King Solomon's Temple is based on. And he wrote a book called Sacred Science. This is it's Sacred Science, the King of Pharaonic Theology is what it's called. And he goes, he explains why this building is a living building and how it ties into what we do and how the pharaohs were able to build a structure that was alive and what makes it alive and the significance of it being alive and what that has to do with Freemasonry and as Master Masons, why is this important to us? How can this empower us in our personal journey and our craft and also in our Masonic journeys? And so, yeah, I would recommend that. It's called Sacred Science, The King of Theology by R.A. Schwaller de Lubitz.
Awesome. I'll make sure that we have links for that in our show notes. I know you're working on a blog, and it'll be released soon in the future. So for all of our listeners, you're going to want to read whatever Gerald writes. Let me tell you firsthand, if you get a chance and you're somewhere in Illinois where he's going to do a presentation, hit it up. If you're in a neighboring state, go. If you can make it, highly recommended when you talk, brother. You have a unique way of connecting with people. And most especially, what I appreciate is your ability to put yourself out there as well. Not many people can do that. It's clear you've done ego work. You've always been so humble, and I just want to thank you for all your work in Freemasonry and the craft and in the occult spaces and your time for sharing with us today.
And thank you for having me. Thank you for those compliments. And I appreciate you having me on the show. I think what you're doing is hugely important. And I think what's happening in the world, what's happening in Freemasonry, what you're doing, brothers, yourself and brothers that are having podcasts, that are putting their passion into it. In the years to come, it's going to be really important. It's, you know, as far as the spiritual health of the fraternity. I think, you know, at some point in our past, we may have gotten away from that spiritual health. And I think what you're doing, creating forums like this and brothers that are doing the same thing, like it, that's going to be huge, because obviously we can't, you know, have all these discussions in Lodge. But being able to reach out and connect with brothers like this is phenomenal.
I love that you reference this idea of spiritual health. And you can see me, I have a big you know, cat's grin on my face. I just love it, man. Yeah, you know it. I'm with you 100%. So, everybody, I'll have Brother Gerald Fortune's a way to contact him in the show notes. And as soon as we have some listings for blogs and anything he's doing online, we're going to get that out to you guys. Brother Gerald, thank you again so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How about that awesome interview with Brother Gerald Fortune? If you want to know more, head on over to the show notes, scroll down, click contact him. His email address will be there for you. You can talk to him, contact him. All the books that he referenced, Swallowed Lube and In Search of the Miraculous, both of those will be in the show notes, but they'll also be in the author recommended books section of our bookstore, which is an Amazon affiliate link kind of store that we've put together so that you can pick up any of the books that you need right there. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Again, if you want to learn how to support this show, go to WCYpodcast.com. And that's it. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.